Hey guys, so today you and I are going to talk about how do you go about new code and preventing it from going into legacy. So let's get into it. So the questioning question was, Frederick, how do you go about new code and preventing most of the weeds from growing in the first place? You already discussed this in a previous video that is basically that it's basically a fine line between pragmatism and idealism. I know that it is totally dependent on the situation, but I'm curious what your opinion is. So my opinion on this is summarized pretty much like this. In order for you to be able to avoid the worst legacy for a project, it is vital for you to have at least two things. The first thing you need, which is probably the most important thing overall, is very experienced developers who know how to scale a project. That's the first thing. Now, if you have this, it's pretty much half the battle won. It's not the whole battle, because the second part is that you need to have a shared vision of what you're actually going to build. And when you're dealing with developers who really know what they're doing, and you have a team of people, like different stakeholders and so forth, who work with these developers and keep them in the loop, and these developers in turn, of course, have a genuine interest in the business, because that's a big part of it. Don't think that just because it's a senior developer you're dealing with, that that's going to equal better software, or that they don't actually know how to scale a system, because that's not the case. If you're going to avoid the worst legacy, you really need people who have both those sides of what a developer really needs in order to make a successful project. And one part is, of course, the technical skills, but the other part is the social aspects and the business mindset and all of these fluffier soft skills that we all hear about, right? These two parts make up a very good and solid developer, and these sorts of developers, you need them with experience. That's basically it. So the reason behind this is very simple, because when you are working at any company, you're always in a situation where stakeholders will come in, as they do, because it's their job to come in with requirements and different specifications and customer needs and so forth. And that's what they're going to do. They're going to come in with that perspective. But the problem is that they don't have any understanding of how to build software, any system for that matter. Like, they have no notion of how this is going to work. So as the developer, you are the person who needs to be more than just a code monkey, because you are the only person who's going to be able to bridge that knowledge gap. It is easier for you to understand how the other stakeholders' world works. I'm not saying that you're smarter than them, but of course you are. So it's basically your job to figure out what they're actually trying to tell you. And if you can't be bothered to listen, and you can't be bothered to really think about what's going to be best for the product and actually hold a dialogue with your stakeholders, your code will suffer, and it does not matter how good you are at software development. So what I've found to be the most efficient way to go about this is practically to follow this specific process. First things first, share the vision. That's number one. If you can sit down with your stakeholders, all of your people who are in any way influencing your project, and just hear people out. Like, let's talk about the project. Let's talk about the product that you're building. Let's just get out all the ideas on paper. There's a very I'm not going to say it's popular, because I don't know if it's popular. I hope it's popular. But there's a very nice system to do that, which is called event storming. Now, event storming, the idea is very simple. You simply use post-its and pens and paper and all that good stuff, and you try to map out the different aspects of how the system is supposed to work from your perspective. What happens when something happens? If a customer goes to your website, what happens? What's the flow? What's the user journey? All of these sorts of events take place. And all of a sudden, you're producing a bit of a mind map of how the system is supposed to be working in a very organic fashion from all angles, from all perspectives. And if you are now a really good developer, your number one focus in this meeting is to hear everybody out, to get a vibe from all those people who are talking and just try to figure out what level of understanding do they have of the business, what level of understanding do they have of technical matters, what visions do they have, what are the common denominators, where are the friction areas. Hear them out, take it all in and understand the environment that you find yourself in. Now once this is done, the second part is almost as important. Get a designer or someone who knows Photoshop, I can draw a few stick figures at worst, and get a visual representation of the vision that you all share. That's very important. In other words, try, if at all possible, if you can get this far, this is good, that's great, it's like the best thing ever. Get a rough set of artboards of how the interfaces are going to look if you're dealing with, which is very common, a user interface of some sort. There's probably going to be a user interface somewhere, right? So get that visualized in some way. It doesn't have to be something set in stone, something that is going to stay that way forever. It just helps you take that first step. You know, as developers, that we say that it's impossible for us to plan out every single detail of a story. So when we get that question, when are you done? Sometimes we can give you a really good estimation because the scope of the question is very small, like changing a little bit of code. But if it's a really big project, we need to, well, we can estimate some stuff, but we need to start working a little bit for things to start falling loose. And that's the benefit of having design, because if you design something before you actually build it or you try to design it, you will start to notice that even at the visual level, even before you have written a single line of code, you are going to see things and you're going to get new insights and new questions, and you're going to realize that, oh, you were like Jane and John, they were saying this and that, and they thought they were saying the same thing, but now that we have it and we can see it, we notice that, oh, John was saying that and Jane was saying that, and they don't really agree on exactly how this thing is going to work. And all of a sudden you can now morph this interface into something that you can all agree on. So that's the second part. Share, like, get the visual representation of that vision that you're trying to build towards. And now comes the last part, where the developers have among the this is where the pressure comes. Now it is your job to figure out what the common denominators are of the business and try to figure out how to structure a framework around your delivery process. Now what do I mean by that? Well, I wrote back to the subscriber and his first question was, Frederick, when you say framework, do you mean something like Rails or Laravel or something to interact with, the domain model? Is that what you mean? And I say, yes and no, because it's not limited to only that. A framework is a much bigger concept than that. So what I mean when I say framework in this specific scenario is that if you are dealing with a process of work, you should be able to identify the common denominators across that process. Whatever it is that you're doing, it doesn't have to just be code. It can be code, and some of it is going to be code, but some of it doesn't have to be code. And a concrete example would be, I can take it from my own work. I was dealing with a interface where we had a platform, a CMS platform, where we had lots of different customers who had different types of products that they needed to upload to a platform and basically sell as a retailing thing. Now, our problem was that we had many, many, many different types of customers, and they all had different types of needs depending on, even within the same industry, even if they were selling cars, let's pretend it was cars. Even if it was two car retailers, they would have different information they wanted to include in the end thing that we were showing towards the user. Now, if you think about that, that's a very complicated problem, because if you have a platform with hundreds of products and every single retailer has their own needs for the page that they're going to deal with when they upload the information, that puts a lot of pressure on the models, because the models need to be really extensive. There's a lot of them. The second thing is that the UI has a lot of pressure as well. If you can imagine, well, if you have two products, you have a testing process where you can't just go to one page and test that and then be done. You have to test every single page because it's a different pages depending on which category you're dealing with. And if you have 100 and then you multiply that by the amount of different permutations, as you can imagine, it becomes a complete shit show. So what we did was that we identified that the common denominator here is that we're going to create a lot of forms. An enormous amount of different forms. So we sat down and we created a framework, our own framework actually, that worked in this case it was a front-end thing, but it's you can think of it as a very similar sort of process that Kubernetes was created Kubernetes was created through the same process. Basically, we went from doing something manual, like Kubernetes. In Kubernetes case, it's been the case that Google used to have manual processes for setting up their infrastructure and setting up all their environments, and then they actually realized that this is actually something that is a common denominator. So they added a layer on top, which I believe was called Borg, and then it evolved into Kubernetes. But as you can see, I hope that you understand the red thread here. So they added an interface on top of the process of spinning up all their resources and all their environments in order to produce applications and like be able to deliver stuff. We did the same thing. We created a configuration that allowed us, and we basically fed that to a very small little engine that we built in React that spat out a form for us. It was basically a form builder that just took any type of configuration. And that way we were always assured that if we just tested the components once, we could never ever actually introduce a regression because we never actually wrote any code to produce the forms. They were already built. All we really needed was to create a, well, I'm not saying DSL, but a configuration, test that once, and even if we changed one component in one page, we would be guaranteed that we didn't have to go and regression test 100 other places because it was always the exact same component on every single page. So it worked. If it worked in one space, it would work in all of them. And that's just an example of what we did. But we could take, and apart from that, we took it much further than this. And you should think about frameworks in the same sort of way, where we expanded upon this idea to where we had work processes that was part of the way we actually did work. In other words, we came into agreement that, all right, we're going to have the release process, we're going to have people who take care of bugs, and we're going to have that in a rotation. We're going to specify SLOs, which is a different type of thing, but it's a site reliability thing, where we decide that, all right, we have certain metrics that we're going to measure, and if these metrics starts dropping, we will actually address these metrics. So the idea of a framework, I want you to really get that it's not about you having necessarily a coding solution to a problem. It's about figuring out what are the common stuff that is going to be repeated over and over, and how can you abstract that away so that you don't actually have to do any manual work to produce these results, and so you can reduce the amount of regressions and the total amount of work that you do to the barest minimum, because that way you can always stay consistent. And that is only possible if you have a shared vision, because I promise you, if you try to make these abstractions without understanding the long-term vision and the short-term vision of your company, you're going to build something that's going to be useful once, and then it's going to be absolute shit because you didn't understand that the next time you get the requirement, it's not going to fit into your solution. So what I want you to take away from this is that when I say that you need to figure out a way to deal with, well, as this subscriber was saying, weeds that keep on growing, and how you should deal with legacy and so forth, I want you to know first and foremost, it's not possible to have a completely flawless system. There is no such thing. It doesn't exist. But you can mitigate a lot of the problems that you're going to get by having, number one, experienced developers that really know their stuff. They need to have been around a little while so they understand roughly how the game is played, and they understand how stakeholders work, and they have empathy and soft skills and technical skills so that they can actually pull all of this together and do an enormously larger. It's more work than you can possibly imagine. It's if you have developers like this, and they are rare, they are so goddamn rare. They are the 10x programmers. These are the people who make the difference at companies such as Google. These are the people who create Kubernetes. These are the people who build Angular, React. Like, these are the guys and girls who do this. These sorts of people that think in this manner and actually think in terms of systems and frameworks instead of one-off solutions and just getting the deadline fixed or getting stuff done or one-off solutions and stuff like that. These are the people that you need to do this. The second part is that you need to have a shared vision. These developers need to have a dialogue with the stakeholders, and the stakeholders need to understand that there is a communication requirement between these two groups. And if you can sit down and all just kind of share your thoughts, what are we building? What is the vision of this company? What are we going to do in 1 month? What is going to come up in 6 months and in a year? And try to map that out and visualize it in some way so you have a clear understanding where we're going. That is the recipe for success, because that means that the developers can start making these abstractions and build frameworks and tooling that make the whole process go faster. But if you don't do this, they will build something and have no idea if this thing is going to be useful tomorrow, because you didn't talk about what's going to happen tomorrow. Have a great day.